Hello and welcome to, what is this, episode 19. Damn, we're nearly at 20 episodes now, Lee.
19, is it?
19 wow. Episodes of the Pokeballs podcast. I'm joined with my lovely host, Osiris, aka Lee, back for another week covering the news. We've actually had, it feels like things are finally ramping up. I know we keep saying this every week, but we're finally getting information now, and we're worlds almost a week away. You know, it feels like we're getting some exciting information. I know we've had some exciting information already this week that we can lead on to in a second. But yeah, it's exciting times. But how are you doing, Lee?
It is exciting times, mate. I'm good. I am good, mate. I'm excited
You've
for Worlds.
Worlds
I am,
coming
yeah.
Up.
So
why are you excited for Worlds, Lee? Any particular reason?
Well, all of it, mate, really. All of it. It's going to be first time in Japan, so that's going to be an experience by itself. And obviously casting is going to be extremely fun. Second time casting Worlds, which is just a privilege to do. So that's going to be great. And then obviously everything around Worlds and all the other stuff, it's going to be great. It's going to be absolutely amazing, mate. I cannot wait for it. Honestly, it's going to be good. And like you say, things are starting to kind of come out the woodwork in regards to updates, potential things that we could see. And we know for a fact we're going to get some sort of announcement at the World Championships. Whether or not it will be a reveal date for the DLCs, which could possibly be, or maybe some information teased around it. Or might not be anything at all, but we'll see.
Yes, we will have to wait and see. But yeah, I don't think really is. We might as well just hop straight into it. I know we had a sort of big discussion before the podcast about stuff, but
yeah,
obviously the most exciting thing I think is that we've had a Datamined Pokemon Presents for, which seems to be happening next week. It's not come up again.
Disappeared. Yeah, it's a data mined right. Information from Pokemon Masters, and this kind of popped up from the data mined information with some information about a Pokemon Presents or an event happening after a Pokemon Presents on the 8th of August, which is a week. Well, next week, you know, because we are recording this on Wednesday for once, and we are all up to date with everything going on. So yeah, next Tuesday is supposedly the date for when the Pokemon Presents will be. Obviously, as of recording this podcast, nothing has been confirmed yet from Pokemon, and if we are going to get a Presents next week, you would imagine we'll probably get an announcement either later today, tomorrow, maybe even Friday. I don't think they're going to announce it on Monday, but you never know. Possibilities are endless. But
the thing is, right, it to me, it seems a little weird that they decided to do Presents a week before, well, not even a week before Worlds, like 3 days before Worlds. And so
yeah,
think about it now. Like, I don't think they're going to reveal much, really, unless they're going to tease the tease that they're going to tease at Worlds, you know, because they're not going to drop a shit ton of news right when Worlds is like 3 days away, because they're probably gonna do that then.
But is the news at Worlds gonna be kind of, you know, it's never really huge news, right? They normally tease a new Pokemon or a mechanic or something like that at Worlds, which is more related to, you know, the video game itself, in regards to the game. So whether or not they kind of set that teaser up for Worlds with this Presents, I'm with you, though, mate. I am a bit skeptical on this actually coming to fruition. I really honestly feel like it's very close to have, like...
No, I think it will
Pokemon
happen.
Day,
I'm thinking it will think? Happen. Yeah, yeah, I think it will happen. I just don't think it will be... like I say, I don't think it will be very...
it's a Presents, though.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we're wrong, but you're right. It just...
It just feels like a lot of effort to go to when they're not going to drop anything.
Why not do it afterwards? You're right. I guess if it's a
Or do it at Worlds, you know?
Do it at Worlds. I don't know. I mean, maybe we're wrong.
Maybe it's too long to do in the closing ceremony at Worlds. Maybe that's the thing. They need to, they want to do it close together, but they don't want to do it in the...
Unless they drop some more information, but incredibly vague information in the Presents, and then they build upon it for Worlds. I guess that would make a lot of sense, right? Because at the end of it, they could say, make sure you watch Worlds, to get the full information, right, which will help build up the hype for Worlds even more. So I guess, I guess in my head that actually makes a lot of sense. Whether or not that actually
happens. That's how I kind of saw it playing out, if that's what was going to go down. I just feel like it's from going from Pokemon Day in February to now and having like one additional trailer from that initial trailer about the DLCs to now, to going to a week where we're potentially getting two big drops in 1 week. It just seems like...
Unless this is what they want to do, you know, unless they really just want to... Because if we are getting, you know, the DLC in September, which maybe we'll find out on Tuesday, maybe we'll find out at Worlds when it actually drops. You'd like to think we would find out soon, right? Because it feels like it's getting to that point. Mm. Maybe they're just like, okay, we just need to start hyping the shit out of it. And it does it does seem weird to do two big reveals essentially in 1 week, but maybe it's part of their Worlds promotion. You know, they might have loads of stuff to tease in the coming weeks, you know. Like I said, Worlds is what? So after Worlds will be 3 weeks until beginning of September. So, you know, that's not really a lot of time. So I guess it just depends.
They could just announce the release date at Worlds. That would be pretty hype.
Well,
that's hype enough. You know, they could tease it on Tuesday in the presents with another trailer, show some new stuff off, and then drop the release date at Worlds, which could work. Something like that. I think that's probably what they're going to use it as. Like, this is a springboard for what we'll be expecting at Worlds, I think,
if it actually happens,
yeah, which I'm still a little skeptical of, because it would make sense as well, you know, if it does happen. I think the Mewtwo 7-star raid event that we've been harping on about for the last month since that information was data mined, I think that would make sense to do it this week as well and have the 7-star terror raid. The Rillaboom's ending on Sunday. I think if nothing get announced on Sunday evening when that finishes, I think it probably is more indicative towards something being announced on the Pokemon, in the Pokemon Presents, that would maybe line up with that. But again, best guess scenarios and all.
Yes, I mean, it could be a very busy week for you next week if shit does
I'm flying on Tuesday. That's the worst part about it. Like, I fly on Tuesday morning from the UK, so if the presents is like 1, there's no way I'm going to... Because I think I land in Japan on like at like 7:30 Wednesday morning. So
Do you have any rehearsals on Wednesday?
No, so my day on Wednesday is completely free, just to get to the hotel, check in and check out the sites and stuff like that. So I'm probably not going to be able to check into the afternoon though, so I'll probably have to find somewhere with Wi-Fi and do a video on the fly, which would be fun.
That could be cool, but I'm also here if you need help with stuff, so
I appreciate it.
We can also whip some things up. But I mean, yeah, it feels like... It's funny because we had this conversation yesterday about patience. And it feels like with Pokemon, I mean, life is about patience, I guess, sometimes, but it just feels like when you're waiting for game stuff, especially with a company that doesn't, I'm convinced, doesn't really have a solid release schedule for certain things. Maybe the games, but for everything else, I think they kind of make up as they go along. So I'm kind of like, you just have to be patient and wait. You know, you will eventually get what you want. It'll be very interesting, obviously, with Worlds coming up, because we're not going to harp on this for too long because I know a lot of people aren't necessarily interested, but they recently changed the structure for Worlds. We were talking a lot about it before the podcast. It's a big deal for it's a big deal because this is one of the biggest changes. The circuit has needed a big change for a while, because it's becoming... I mean, particularly last season was the most prominent season where we saw it happen, but normally with a game release, not necessarily just the VGC, but, you know, there's a big, obviously, boost of promotion for just the brand, the IP in general, right? So the competitive scene, regardless of whether it's video game, TCG, Go, and whatever, it tends to get a big boost whenever new Pokemon content comes out. And last year, particularly, as we've mentioned on the podcast in the past, you know, the numbers for events were through the roof. You know, we're finally sort of getting to, like, feels like we're kind of sort of hitting like esports numbers and or, you know, it was cool to see events were stacked, but obviously came with a lot of problems. Attendance, not being able to get a ticket was one of the most frustrating things. And excuse me, and the payout, so the way you qualify for Worlds, it felt like it needed to change, particularly the world structure in general.
And it was a half season last season.
And it
really,
was a half season. You know, it was
made it even more difficult.
So I think coming out of COVID, it was things were difficult. So I'm not blaming them for that, but I'm glad that they've done a change. So just to briefly like summarize how the qualification system used to work. So we've got the VGC numbers here, but this isn't necessarily, it's very slightly depending on the game or whatever it is you're doing, but there's normally you'd have day one and you'd have day two. So day one would be Friday, day two would be Saturday, finals would be on the Sunday. You could get a day one invite and a day two invite. They were technically treated as two separate tournaments. So in order to qualify for day two, you either had to get the most amount of CP in your region. There'd be a certain bracket where you could get a day two invite to Worlds.
Yeah, like top eight in the US CP standings, championship point stands at the end of the season would get that day two invite. Top 16 would be European. LATAM would have their own, and Oceania would have their own as well. So the top placing players in the championship leaderboard at the end of the season would get those day two invites. Everyone else has hit that threshold for like the championship bar for a Worlds invite, which for Europe this season was 300, US was 350 or 400, I think. So if you hit that amount of championship points, you guaranteed your day one invite, but you had to play in day one of the tournament, and you'd have to finish day one with an X and two record or better to progress on to day two. And that's when the real beef kind of the tournament started. So it's a grueling process, but they've totally restructured that. I'm throwing it back to you, mate, to take it on for next season, which is, I think, a really positive step.
Yeah, no. So thank you for explaining that. So essentially day one and day two basically were two different tournaments. If you did well enough in day one, you made it into day two, but people could basically almost get a head start into the day two tournament if they were good enough. But they've changed it this year now that they've basically binned day two, which we've been saying for a long time. That something needed to change, right? Because it felt like we were talking about Worlds what needed to be exclusive for like the best players around the world. And, you know, I mean, it sort of didn't almost feel that way. And so this season they've done a few things. One, they've upped the qualification requirements to get an invite. And then two, they've obviously, as I just mentioned, they've been day two. So now it's just a day one tournament. Now, whether or not that ends up being 3 days or 2 days, we're discussing. Normally it's 3 days because, you know, you'd have the day one on Friday, you'd have the day two on Saturday. Mm. But it depends on how many people end up qualifying. I guess with this new structure and the higher qualification bar, we don't know whether there will be higher numbers, lower numbers, the same amount of numbers. And it'll be interesting to see how stacked the actual tournament will be, because, like I said, normally you would have a split between day one and day two. Day one could still be really busy, but you'd still have day two would be a lot smaller because there's less players. But now it would essentially be treated like a much larger tournament over 3 days or 2 days. We don't know. In my head, it makes sense as 3 days.
I think you're right with the 3 days, because I think when you like, it does depend on the amount of players that do qualify in attendance. Because if you're looking at like nine rounds of Swiss on, say, the Friday, you're not going to then play nine rounds of Swiss and then play up to the finals, what they normally do, you know, top cut up into finals.
The Sunday,
like,
the last
so that
day
would be the Saturday
finals.
Only. Yeah, so you would probably play Swiss on the first day, and then you'd play top cut the second day up to the finalists, and then Sunday would be the finalists. Because we were talking before the pod whether or not this means they could potentially bring back a last chance qualifier. And they may do. They may do a last chance qualifier on the Thursday next year, because they can do it with this system as well to get into the World Championships for those players that maybe missed out on going to, you know, the events throughout the season because they couldn't commit to it for whatever reason, or they just missed the CP cut off with the amount of CP that they could acquire throughout the season, and give you that last chance. Now, they used to do a last chance qualifier where you could rock up to Worlds, play in that tournament, and it would get you into the actual tournament the next day, which was...
How well did you have to do to get into it? Was it only the winner?
It depended. Like, I think the last one they did was, like, every X2 player by the end of Swiss got in. But then there's previous years it's been, like, top four, top two of the tournament.
Bro, pretty hard Swiss to get in.
It's brutal. It's the most brutal way to get entry. But, I mean, it's the World Championship, so it should be a really... Like, that's almost as difficult, if not harder, an achievement to get into Worlds than any other route that you've got throughout the season.
Because it would be stacked, right? Because anyone who hasn't qualified... It depends on the location. Obviously, yeah. Worlds in Japan this year has made it less accessible to a lot of people, because it's harder to get to, and it's in the summer as well, so... It's expensive. It's very expensive. So it does depend on where it is. But, you know, if it's in a more accessible location...
I think it might be. I would say, like, I have no idea. We'll obviously get the announcement where Worlds will be next year in the closing ceremony, which is one of the most exciting parts of the closing ceremony, where Worlds will be next year. But I do think that it probably might go back to the US because it hasn't been in the US. It wasn't in the US last year. And obviously then before that, we had all the issues with COVID. So we didn't have World Championships for like a couple of years. So I think it probably might go back to the US. And then I think it might be on a rotating cycle. Then we've talked about it before, where it might go between Europe, US, Asia, and then kind of do a rolling cycle around those three regions. But we'll see where they do it. It'd be cool to go back to the US. I think I always enjoy Worlds in the US wherever it has been.
It's a lot easier to get to, right? I mean, USN. I've never been to Worlds, but I've obviously Worlds.
You went last year.
No, that's a lie. I've been to London, but previously before London.
It's like I saw you there. What are you talking about?
I basically just yeeted it into North America. He'd never been anywhere else. That's why London and Japan this year was such a big deal, because they'd always stayed in other...
It was because logistically, though, like TPCI, which is Pokemon Company International, are based in the US. So for them, logistically, it was always easier to do Worlds over there for them, like, you know, setting up, because it's such a big event, right?
Oh, no, I
now
agree.
They're able now, with so many years under their belt, to kind of do it elsewhere and do these huge events elsewhere. So I'd love it to come back to Europe again, but I loved it in London, and I'd love the idea of it in Europe because it means less traveling. But going to the US made it like it was always like that, like a little bit more special, because I don't get to the US very often, so it was like this is a really big deal. It's the same with kind of Japan or other places, you know, because it's like, I've never been to this place. Worlds is there, and it's like Worlds on top of going somewhere new and somewhere, you know, it's just that added excitement. Whereas like when it was in London, it was awesome because it was like, hometown, but it was like I've been to London a million times. I lived in London for, you know, a number of years, and I was like, kind of seen done London. Not interested about going like anywhere while I'm there. Because they've kind of done that and exhausted it already.
But this is the thing.
Let's
have
it in Newcastle. Newcastle, that's where we need it. Northeast of England.
Too many
beautiful
Geordies,
coastline.
Mate. Don't want too many Geordies turning up.
Geordies are the friendliest folk in the country.
That is also very true. I've heard many good things.
That would be a dream of mine. I mean, I would even love it in somewhere like Ireland. I think Ireland would be a great location, whether or not they could facilitate it. But I think Ireland's a great destination, like Dublin Airport. You can fly into Dublin from like pretty much anywhere in the world. So that I feel like that could be another place you could do it.
This is the thing we spoke about at length with a lot of people, not just ourselves, but, you know, they did London, which is fantastic. They're doing Yokohama in Japan, which is amazing. Like, where is it that they could do that would, like, I don't think they're necessarily top Japan, because, I mean, maybe if they did it in Japan again at another point, which we're convinced they probably will do. But, you know, where else could they pick around the world that would be cool? Because you're right about the US, but the thing is with a lot of the US states is some of them are very lackluster where they've had it in the past. I mean, they tried to pick interesting areas, but, you know, We had Boston, we had Anaheim, we had Nashville. I guess some of them, they tried to, obviously Nashville's like heavily music based, so they lent into that with the like the world theme. Boston,
Nashville was cool.
Boston, I don't know what the theme for that was. It sailor themed or something? Boston?
Yeah, it was. It was a pirate Pikachu, wasn't it?
I mean, Vancouver was cool, but again, Vancouver was a very early days, and obviously Hawaii was very
Vancouver
cool as well.
Vancouver was amazing. But... And yeah, I don't know if they could do it in Hawaii now, though. Just
they'd
because
the
world is so much bigger. Yeah, that's the problem. Like, Hawaii was doable back then because Worlds was, so you know, you had like 32 players for the World Championships back then. It's like...
You do it in an event lobby in a hotel now. It's just like...
Yeah.
You know, was it NAIC? They broke like 3,000 players at once in a live event hall, which is...
Yeah, you need like huge venues for these events now. Yeah, which is like... Which does limit where they can go. But there's plenty of places, I think, like, you know... Like, Florida, probably a place they could do it, which is easy accessible. I think that would be quite cool to do it there. You've got California as well.
I've never
Long
done
flight
it in LA.
For a lot. Yeah, they have. Not in LA. They've done it in San Diego, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Twice. So, there's... Yeah, they've... There's... I don't think you would ever do it in Vegas or anything like that. But, you know, you've got... They've got different options. The thing is, as well, there's like certain laws about prize money, which kind of
we had this discussion.
Instantly gets rid of like the option of having it in certain countries, like Spain. You're not going to be able to have it in Spain because
can't give out money.
You can't give out prize money if you're paying entry in prize money. Italy's a bit iffy because I think you need to state the exact amounts that players can earn or something before the tournament. That's why you get special events in these countries rather than regionals. So there is issues.
Special events are free
fine.
Events, just to clarify. So when we go to an event, they have a payout and you have to pay to compete.
And there's no cash reward at those events. You just get the championship points and you get like travel stipends or whatever.
Yeah. So.
Oh, you might not even get travel stipends. I think it's just the championship points, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's specials. So, yeah, there's a few countries that you think probably won't ever be there, which is a shame. But
you never know.
It kind of narrows down the options with where it could be. Like, Germany could definitely house it. We've seen it in London. They can definitely do it there again. There's a few places around the UK where I think they could do it if they came back to the UK. Which would be cool. I'm sure France would be able to do it.
Yeah. I think Paris could be really cool. I think if they did
Paris
it again,
would,
I think
Paris would be
Paris.
Fun. Yeah.
I don't know if they have an event hall in Paris, though.
Oh, they must do. They have to.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm pretty convinced at this point they will come back to London. And they definitely will go back to Japan at some point. But, you know, it'll be very cool to see how this one goes for them. Because I think Europe's... probably a lot easier than Asia for them, even though obviously it's a Japanese company. Again, logistically, if TCPI are based in America, it's a long way to go. And they have a different tournament structure over there. It's not, they use a lot of different systems and stuff. So, you know, I'm sure it'll be amazing, but you know, it's just different. So, from their point of view, will it be a success? I don't know. They'll have to deem that.
I think it will be a success. And I think, like, getting back to the original point, I think the changes for next season are really, really positive. I think the fact that you can go to a regional and get your Worlds invite by just winning a regional.
So you can now get
incredible
an auto invite to Worlds if you win a regional or an international championship. So those are the two big tournaments that you can take part in.
Yeah.
Which you never used to be able to get. It never used to happen. Yeah. So
that's how it used to be. You know, I used to, like, when I first started playing nationals back when nationals were what internationals are now, just on a bit of a smaller scale. Your nationals, you'd finish like top four would get invites to the world championships, and then top two would get like paid invites. But that was the only way you could get an invite. But they've kind of incorporated that successful finish, like, that you can get now into achieving a world's invite, as well as having alongside it the championship point bar system as well, that you can kind of include yourself in if you're not successful in those like upper echelon finishes of events. So I think that's a really nice improvement as well. Best finish limits for a lot of things have changed. So mid-seasons are 6, premier challenges are 6, regionals are 6, I believe, and then there is no best finish limit on international championships, so they just stack, stack, and stack.
But like you said, if you win an international championship or come even second, you get a paid invite to Worlds, so it doesn't necessarily make sense to go unless you want to just go to practice, but you're not going to shell out to chase. Yeah. To Jace
and like,
at some point.
There's like different tiers as well of qualifications. They've got tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. So tier 3 qualification for the World Championships is just going to be hitting that championship bar. So for Europe, it's 400. If you hit 400 championship points, you've got your tier 3 invite to the World Championships. That's going to mean you can play, but you have to pay your own way over there. You have to pay for your hotel and your flights like normal. Tier 2, you are going to get your invite. You've got to finish in a certain placing in your region. So I think it's 17th to 22nd in Europe. It'll be different for the different regions. But there you get a portion travel award and your invite to World Championships. And then the upper echelons of those finishes, like if your place is 1 to 16th in the championship leaderboard in your region for Europe in particular, will change again depending on the region that you're in. You'll get a paid invite to the World Championships. You'll be getting that tier 1 invite, which includes a round 1 bye at the tournament, which is pretty huge, you know, especially if it's X and 2 finishes for progressing on to the next part of the tournament into top cut. It's one less win you need that day, you know, so it's a big deal. But not massively mandatory either. Like I was saying to you, I'd probably prefer to play round one than go in with a round one bye, because I feel like you want that round one.
Depends how confident you are, doesn't it?
I think so. It depends what kind of player you are as well. I just remember, you know, nationals back in the day where when they first introduced the championship point system, if you were in a certain point of the leaderboard going into the next nationals, you got a round one bye at the next nationals. So technically, the Italian nationals, which was first that year when they first introduced it, if you had enough championship points going into the German nationals, you got a round one bye. So I got a round one bye going into German nationals after Italy, and then because I finished in the top 16 at German nationals, I was still in that championship leaderboard place to get another round one bye in the UK nationals. And I went in there.
You're out of focus.
You're focused. So that's how it kind of worked. You've just thrown me completely off what I was saying.
Sorry.
Out of focus.
Just the day one, the round one buys you're talking about and how your previous...
And how what?
How it used to work and how your...
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's how it used to work. Sorry. Sorry, everyone listening, viewing. God's just totally. I'm blaming you, mate, for that. Anyway, no, that's how it used to work. We're going to get round one buys going into this tournament. So, yeah, it can be good. All I was relating it to come back to me, was I always preferred playing round one. I felt cold going into round two. Even though I had a win, felt cold. I always prefer to play. Depends on you as a player, though. You know.
Yeah.
I think
that's pretty much it. I don't want to bore people too much. I know a lot of people don't necessarily enjoy it.
Yes, just big changes, lots of them positive. It'll be great to hear what your thoughts are if you're planning to play next season. Alongside that as well, mate, a lot of the other regionals have been announced for next season in Europe and the US, so, and other parts of the world, other regions. So we know pretty much where all the regionals special events and stuff like that will be next season. Just trying to focus again. And so it's very exciting. And you can start planning your travel for next season already, which is very good.
Excellent. We'll find out more, hopefully. Hopefully next week. So we can record the podcast. No, not next week. Week after next. Hopefully we'll find out more. We can record next week's podcast on Monday night before league goes on Tuesday, and then hopefully the week after that we can do the podcast to normal, and then we can discuss all the stuff that's actually happened. But maybe we'll get loads of information this week, maybe we'll get loads of information next week, we probably will, but again, we'll just have to wait and see. Some other interesting news though, which we touched on previously, And it's really funny actually, because I'm not going to call the guy out, but we spoke about previously about, you know, the next gen Switch, it's coming soon, right? It's got to be coming soon. We had this whole theory, was it last episode or the episode after that, where, you know, that it comes out next year, right? We're like, it could come out next year. They announced it at some point this year. Comes out next year in like April, May next year. They'll have a launch game. What launch game that will be? I think a lot of people in the comments were like, it'll probably be a Mario game, which makes a lot of sense. They'll launch a game with it. And then obviously you'll have all that time for people. You get all the people that will buy it because they'll be like, they'll insta buy it because like, I want this. They'll pre-order it, which depending on what they do, you know, I don't know whether I would, but I'm probably going to end up getting one anyway. It obviously depends on the price, but I can't see them upping the price, but they might, you know, you never know. So that will come out in April. Then you have that time between Christmas and April where people will decide whether they want to buy it. And then obviously they'll have a big push before Christmas, you know, for people to, because obviously Christmas, we'll sell like hotcakes next Christmas. And, you know, as we've discussed, whatever Pokemon game they end up doing next November, whether it be, a Legends Unova or Legends Kyurem, or whether it be Gen 5 remake or just a standard another Legends game, whatever it ends up being, they'll push that with the Switch for Christmas because it will come out in November, mid-November normally. So we were like, yeah, that's definitely going to happen. And we had one comment that was like, oh, you guys are so wrong. People have been saying there's going to be a Switch Pro for so long. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it would come next year, right?
This is my point. Even the last couple of weeks as well.
This is what I'm about to lean on to in a second, because there is now actually evidence.
But this is.
We were like, you know, for a long time, obviously, people have thought that we will be getting a Switch Pro at some point because it didn't. The Switch is severely underpowered at this point. We saw it with Scarlet and Violet, you know. Nintendo have always been famously good at optimizing games. It shouldn't be able to run on the hardware to run, but obviously we hit Scarlet and Violet come out, and it's probably the first example of it being poorly optimized. You know, obviously the hardware isn't great, but we know they can optimize it, so it's probably a bit of, you know, a bit of both at this point, a bit of laziness, a bit of the fact that the software is just they're reaching their limits with the hardware they have.
Yeah.
Excuse me, within the Switch. All that being said, so we were like, next year it makes sense. And they normally work on I think someone on Reddit last year was pointing out, it's normally like a 6 or 7 year cycle for console releases. If you look back on the releases of the different iterations of, you know, the DS, the Wii, the GameCube, you know, all of the stuff, the Wii U, the Switch, it's normally 7 year cycle. And we've hit that point now, you know, it's almost 8 years now, I think. And so, yeah, so there's been a couple of articles this week basically coming out confirming that we will actually get one early next year. To say, you know, finally, we will get whatever it ends up being, you know, realistically, it's not going to be drastically different. I think this is the form factor that has kind of taken off recently. We've seen it with the Steam Deck, you know, it's a portable handheld. There's not really much you can do. Maybe you could do something cool with a separate screen or the Joy-Cons. I'm sure Nintendo will find a way of making it hella interesting, you know, because that's just they are good at innovating. And
yeah, I'd also be interested. I don't think they're going to call it anything like the Switch. I think they're going to have a completely new name for it.
The Switch 2 sounds shit. Like,
I think the Wii U was like a big bad, wasn't it? It didn't perform well sales-wise. And so I feel like they won't go down that same route again. It wasn't like the new 3DS, you know, where it had like... That was probably quite successful, but...
I think in a sense... Yeah, I do agree, and I don't agree with you. I think in a sense, like, like I said, this form factor works, right? So realistically, what do I want from, if I'm a customer, what do I want from a next generation console from Nintendo? You know, we've seen the OLED Switch, they've done that. You know, an OLED Switch seems like on the base model, it has to be OLED screen now. It doesn't come with an OLED screen, I'm going to be pissed off.
That's what I heard, you know. I heard something, someone was saying, I can't remember which article it was, but or which source it was from, but they were saying that they might be resorting to putting back the LCD screens to keep the cost of the new console down, which I think is a huge degradation to the, you know, the new console. You kind of need, it needs to be bare minimum OLED or better,
unless,
right?
Unless, so obviously they always do, I guess it depends, but they always do a cheaper version of the console, right? They normally release it. With the 3DS, we had the 2DS, which, you know, it was cheaper. It was just a flat 3DS, right? And it still sold really well. You know, they did some cool different designs. I know that were released. Those were released when Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire come out. So you had the themed versions of those with like the clear cases, and I thought they were actually really cool, to be honest with you. And obviously, when the Switch come out, you had the Switch Lite, which doesn't have the detachable Joy-Cons. And so they are 100% definitely going to do something like that again. So would it make more sense? You might be right to keep the console down, but maybe they launch the 3D, the new console with the OLED screen, and then when the cheaper one comes out, they stick to the LCD. Because I think a lot of people are going to be upset unless they get a really good LCD screen, you know, because it's little things, you know, because like I said, at this point, there's not really much you can do innovation-wise. I mean, I'm sure Nintendo will, but little things like the bezels, right? The bezels are chunky AF on the original Switch, right? You can see here. They're large. They're large bezels on the Switch. It seems like an outdated console at this point. It's not, but it is and it isn't, right? You should not have bezels this thick on a modern day console. I know that OLED obviously has a lot smaller bezels, but maybe if they found
smaller though, mate.
No, not you know? Incredibly smaller, but enough to make a difference. I guess the screen's bigger, right, as well. So that kind of, when you've got a larger screen, the bezels don't seem as thick. So maybe they find a really high quality LCD screen with thin bezels, and maybe people are okay with that. I mean, we'd have to see again. I'm sure they're not stupid. They've been so successful for so long with these consoles. I can't see them fucking it up. But, you know, an OLED screen, obviously, back to what I was trying to say, makes sense. Or an improved screen, whatever it ends up being. Cleaner aesthetics, again, I mentioned that, which they 100% will do. A better dock. The dock is shit for this one, realistically. We know essentially all it is for the money they charge you for the actual dock itself, it's just a HDMI pass-through converter. Type C to HDMI, and then with
it's
two...
It's cheap in plastic.
It's cheap in plastic.
Even the OLED ones, it's just cheap in plastic. I honestly prefer the non-OLED dock, because of the flap on the back actually is hinged, whereas on the OLED versions, it's a whole piece is detachable, so it's like almost clips onto the back. And it, in my opinion, it makes it feel even cheaper. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with you on that. The dock, it looks nice aesthetically to look at the OLED one, because it's got the nice design on it, but otherwise it's just cheap and tacky, and I think they could make that way more high-end. And even if that increased the price a little bit because of the materials that they're using, I'd be happy to pay that high price. But I mean, what do you expect the price point to be when it drops? Because the thing with the Switch is, it really, since its release, it hasn't dropped too much in price. Like, when you're still looking to buy a new one now, you're still paying, like, especially in the UK, you're paying like £300 for a Switch brand new.
I think
you know, that's not an OLED version. So like maybe £280 for just your standard original Switch. And then for your OLEDs, like £320.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it was an interesting one, because, you know, we were talking about, we had this discussion a long time ago about bringing back, I don't know if I had a discussion with you, but I definitely had it with a friend about bringing the great thing, obviously, before this, they used to have two consoles, right? They used to have the DS, the portable console, which was the DS, and then your main console, which is just standard stay-at-home console. And obviously, with the Switch, they combined the two. That was why it was so successful, right? And cause some of the reasons why, you know, obviously the hardware, it's a lot harder to get more powerful hardware in such a small chassis. But, you know, with the DS obviously was a lot cheaper than a Wii or the Switch. And so they did a lot of, like you said, multiple iterations. They did cheaper versions, they did more expensive versions, they did newer models. I mean, the 3DS had loads of different versions. I mean, I had three of the 3DSs. You know, I had the original one, then I had the one they did, like the XL version they did after that, and then I actually got like the latest version before they actually canned and moved on to the combination, the Switch. So obviously that was a lot easier to do. And I think with the Switch, really, you've only got the Switch Lite and the Switch Pro, so they're not really going to drop in price. I guess it is frustrating, I guess, from you, like you said, you know, a 5-year-old console you'd think would still be at least be cheaper, or they would have dropped the price a little
bit. I always remember, like, even going back to the Wii and stuff like that, you know, you would, you know, like, when a new console would drop, it would obviously be that higher market price. But then, like, 3-4 years later, you know, you'd still be seeing people pick them up because they were, like, reduced to, like, you know, from their original price point of, like, you know, maybe, probably never 300 when they first released. Maybe were. But then, like, towards the end of their cycle, you could get them brand new for, like, £100, you know? You know, it'd be £99.99.
Maybe it's just because...
But the Switch has never done that.
Maybe it's because there's just how successful it still is. Maybe they just haven't,
probably
they haven't seen the need to drop the price because people were still buying.
Don't need to clear the stock.
Whenever
they
do like a limited edition version, like it sells like hotcakes, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
But this article, this IGN article, does actually mention what you just said about it having an LCD screen.
Oh, okay. So that's
probably where you read it. But
yeah.
I just hope there is a better LCD screen and not the exact same one, because I think that would piss a lot of people off. They can't use the same screen. There's no way. It would definitely be a step backwards.
It has to be an OLED screen, I think. Like, bare minimum.
I don't know. I think they could find... I think you can get good LCD screens out there. But, you know, we'd have to see.
Yeah.
But obviously, the main thing, going back to what we want, is obviously upgraded hard, better hardware inside the console. It will probably be, again, it says down here, boosted graphics akin to the PlayStation 4.
It's pretty incredible, considering it's a handheld console.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've only got to look at things like the Steam Deck, you know.
That's very true.
It will probably be of similar, I would like to think, and or hope, of similar power to the Steam Deck. And if it is, then obviously for Nintendo games, that's a lot of power. Because, you know, the Steam Deck's... I mean, don't get me wrong, the Steam Deck, you know, it's not the it's still not incredibly powerful, but it can, and it can't pay. You're not playing like fucking AAA games on like max settings, ultra, you know. But you can play a lot of games that you wouldn't think you'd be able to play on a console, you know, this size. A lot of PC games, right, on the Steam Deck, you can play a lot, which is obviously comes down to optimization and stuff. But that would give obviously Nintendo a lot more scope. Well, I mean, it might be more powerful. I mean, we're not gonna know, but obviously, to keep it in this form factor, you're going to be limited to what you can do with it. So, again, we'll just have to wait and see. But it is exciting to know that there essentially is confirmation now at this point that we will be getting another console. But what they do with it, we don't know. Again, I would imagine they'll probably tease that. I don't know. I guess it's hard because the DLC is going to come out this year. So you'd think if it's coming out second half of next year, when would they think about, or like the middle of next year, whenever it ends up being, April, May, June? I reckon April, because I think that's when, similar to, I think the Switch released in March. So maybe you'd think they would announce it soon, maybe after Christmas, beginning of the year, say that one's coming. But then would they want to hype it up more? It's hard to tell. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see what we actually get, and then just go from there.
Just looking at the past years for when we next do a Nintendo Direct, like roughly we kind of know that we're probably going to get one around September time, but when about in September. It's been sporadic the last few years, about like it's been like the first week in September, second and third week in September, but generally looks like September for the last few years has been the month where we get that second Direct. And it could be a possibility, if it is going to be early release next year. We've said this before, that we could get an announcement as soon as that. So September could be a really exciting month, not just for Pokemon fans with potential DLCs dropping, but also for the general wider fan base of the, you know, the Nintendo franchise, where we get that new console announced. Otherwise, it might be early next year when they announce it for a November release, which I've also heard from a few sources as well. But I do agree with you when you come back to your first point about the release game of it. I don't think it will be a Pokemon game. I think it'd be a Mario game.
I think it
has to be a Mario game, right? Could be Mario Kart as well. Like, I think we talked about that. Mario Kart would be a great
Mario
release Party, title, or Mario Odyssey, too, I think.
Yeah.
Or just a new Mario game.
It's a shame they couldn't delay Tears of the Kingdom release Tears of the Kingdom with the new console, because again that would have been a really good one to launch, and it would have been so good, similar success as the Switch did, because it's such a good console. But like I said, it has to, I don't think it necessarily matters, especially if they have backwards compatibility with games, that I don't think it's as important necessarily. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't think it's as important that the launch title be that good, like obviously Breath of the Wild was. The Switch was a little bit different because obviously it launched with no other games other than Breath of the Wild, so it had to be good. But I'm not sure if, especially if we do have, like I said, backwards compatibility, whether that is would necessarily be the case. I'd imagine they'd still want to release a strong title with it, regardless of whether that is the case, but we just have to wait and see. If they don't do backwards compatibility, they're going to piss a lot of people off.
I think it has to be backwards compatible. Really has to be,
especially if they're not changing the form factor too much. I mean, there's no, I mean, if they do what they, I mean, at least, I mean, with the 3DS, obviously, no, the 3DS was backward compatible, right? So I guess it makes sense, but
yeah, with DS games, so I don't see any reason why not. You know,
I think it doesn't make...
could just have a little groove on the cartridge to make it compatible. But like, just, you know, make it a little bit different with the new Switch.
Well, yeah, because you're not going to want to run new games on the old console, are you? But you'd say did that, but then you'd have to optimize it for different consoles. At which point,
did you as well? Even if you file down that little ridge on the 3DS cartridge and put it so you can put it into a DS Lite or whatever, it still won't run, even though you can put it in.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because, like I said, it's probably different. It's a more powerful game, and it's a different game built on a different engine. So you want it running on old. So in that respect, like obviously, I you know, that makes sense. Like, I'm not hopping on for that, but to have backwards compatibility, that doesn't make, it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense to not do it at this point. Especially
this iteration. We just need to be able to play our Switch games now on the new console. I think that's all anyone would want, really.
Do you know what would also be really nice with the launch of the new console? A revamped online system. A good online system, because it's so doo-doo, the Nintendo Switch Online. Like, it's hardly worth the money as it is. And granted, they don't charge you a lot of money like they do for Xbox Live or PlayStation Online, or whatever it's called. I haven't played it in so long. But, you know, it's only £20, or it might be a bit more than that now. But you don't really get anything for it. It just allows you to play online, which is a bit of a con, in my opinion. No, it's a lie. You do get the retro games, but again, it feels like it's not worth it, in my opinion. I'd rather it be more money and be developed better and have a stronger library of back catalogue of games. Like you said, it doesn't make any sense to me, especially when they're so fucking hot on emulation and say how it's bad and they shut anyone down who runs emulation and hates it. Why they don't push, you know, especially for like an online Nintendo Online subscription, you know, charge £50 a year, but give everyone access to every single Nintendo backlog. You know, like, that's such a big selling point, right?
Yeah,
they have such a good back catalog of games, and I know they have some, but like, haven't done any of the Pokemon games, as we've mentioned loads of times. Like, why they haven't done a classic collection yet? Hopefully, we'll see one soon at this point, but. You know,
might be saving that for the new console.
Yeah, just, you know, why is there not? I think that also needs a reworking, in my opinion. But
no,
again,
I completely agree with you.
If people still buy it, you know, what is the incentive to do it? But you know, you can't get lax in this market. But like I said, unfortunately, Nintendo do have. They hit you with the nostalgia, regardless of what franchise it is that they get you in with from a young age. And, you know, we see a lot of people grow
Coming
getting
back
into
for more.
the Chinese 30s, 40s, you know, playing games that. Playing. Obviously, a lot of people game now. It's a lot less taboo to play video games. But obviously, the Switch is a lot more of a casual. It's more of like it's a casual kind of gaming introduction into gaming, should I say. So, you know, like I said, they hit you with a nostalgia. Whatever game they hook you in with, they can get you to buy the console, really, because they'll just remake games like things like Mario, Zelda, Pokemon. They're gonna milk them for ages. Pikmin, Animal Crossing. We'll probably get an Animal Crossing game. That could be a good release, you know, with the new console. Although it felt like we had one kind of recently. We had one during COVID, wasn't it? Was it 2020? So 4 years, I don't know what the release cycle normally is for the Animal Crossing games. But that's something else they could also do. Nintendogs, they haven't done Nintendogs in such a long time, man. I think that would sell really well as well.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, 100%, bro. 100%, I think people would buy Nintendogs. You know,
I never played it.
especially, oh, it's genuinely great game. Great game.
Wait.
A lot of nostalgia playing that game as well. But, you know, there's a lot of scope. Again, exciting times, whether it be for Pokemon or Nintendo, but we just have to be patient. But it does feel like the next half of this year, especially if we get the DLC in September, the first DLC in September, like it's gonna be very fruitful from sort of basically essentially from now on up until the end of the year.
I think so, yeah. It's very exciting, I think, yeah, for what could come, especially coming into next year. It's going to be like, you know, I think like this year I felt quite excited about, you know, the prospect of DLCs coming into this year. We kind of knew they were going to drop, but I think next year's even more exciting because we're going to have potentially a new console, potentially a new kind of stem of Pokemon game, whether that's related to Black and White or whatever, but that could be on the new console as well. So it's kind of exciting because remember when the Switch dropped, mate, we had to wait a long time for Sword and
Yeah,
Shield.
yeah,
Like, how
yeah.
many years
That's why I didn't buy
it's
it straight away. Because
yeah, because
I bought one because I knew eventually it would come out, right?
yeah, but it was a long wait before we made that transition from the new 3DS or 3DS onto the Switch, because Sword and Shield didn't drop until, what was it, 2019, was
Yeah,
it, I think.
I think.
Yeah, so it
Switch
was a
come out in
long time.
2016, wasn't it?
Yeah,
17?
before we transitioned over to it, and the Switch had been out, like, yeah, like you said, 3 years. We had Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, but they weren't like competitive. They
Seven,
weren't using the
seventeen,
competitive circuit. Yeah,
seventeen.
so it was a long wait. So it'd be nice if we do get the new console, and then there is straight away on it a new Pokemon game that we can use with it. So that would be cool.
Yeah,
We'll see.
we'll
Like
have
you
to
say,
see.
patience is the key in all of this, but I don't think we're going to have to wait very long to find a bit more out, because if these rumors and leaks are true, you know, there's just going to be more of them coming out to kind of back up the truth, and we'll have a clearer picture for sure going into like whatever a Nintendo Direct, if that drops in September or further along the line.
The thing is as well with Worlds, it's like this is their biggest in-person event, right? Because they don't do anything like this for any of the other games. So, you know, it wouldn't be surprising me in coming years, or you know, especially if Pokemon picks up a lot, if they start announcing other shit at Worlds, you know, because it could eventually become a much larger thing than it already is. I mean, it's already getting bigger, right, compared to where it has been. But it'd be exciting to see what's come. I have got some stuff for Scott's goodie bag today. If we want to drop into it, hop into it before we end this week's episode.
Let's do it, mate. I'm
Let's do
excited to
it.
see what
Let's
you've
do
got.
it. Let's get rid of that. 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 Couple things. Nothing cray cray. Wait, what the hell? Okay, well, I thought I had more than this. Where did it go? Go back to Reddit. Reddit. Do-do-do. So, the first thing I had. Hang on. On the fly. On the fly. Oh, that was it. I had a couple of figs, didn't I? Let's open that up. So the first thing I saw it's not the coolest thing ever, but for me, for those of you who don't know, Shuckle is my favorite Pokemon. It has been for a long time. So I liked it because, you know, it had, I saw it, I was like, oh, it has the most defense, biggest, largest defenses stats in the game. So I was like, love this Pokemon. So I loved it for a long time. My username was DFW Shuckle for a long time. That was what my old channel used to be called. That's what I used to go by when I, as my old online game name and stuff. So basically, all that being said, I found this article of someone who beat BDSP with just a Shuckle.
Very cool.
A shiny Shuckle that they had did the whole thing with a Shuckle, and I just thought that was very cool.
That is very cool. Brilliant Diamond, the whole run with a Shuckle.
Mm-hmm.
Did they start with it at level what, like level one or level? Let's have a look. A low level after hatching it. I'm presuming they hatched it or caught in the wild or what? I don't know. It's a very cool story.
Main moveset was Defense Curl, Rollout with Power Split and Substitute.
Nice.
Acupressure absolutely... and Rest. They changed it about, but super happy with the run. Had a blast. So yeah, I just thought that was cool. Just, you know, you see a lot of people do runs with just one Pokemon. Shiny Shuckle looks sick in that game. I've almost finished BDSP.
I know
we've mentioned this.
It looks
this.
So good, doesn't it?
It does look good.
It looks amazing, actually. That blue is, like, it's the blue lovely. With the yellow looks great, yeah.
That's another reason why I like Shuckle, because Shiny Shuckle is blue, and blue's my favourite colour.
Yeah.
But,
it's
yeah.
very, very nice.
I've almost finished.
Yeah, props on that. That's cool.
I've almost finished it, so we can do some Shiny Hunt soon. I just need to do the league. Which I found out recently, like, you can't buy ethers in BDSP, which is really annoying. So I don't know what you're meant to do if you run out of PP and just die, I guess, but I'll have to try and see how good the run is. And then the other thing that I saw,
you should be alright. Just
of,
level up enough.
Yeah.
Get yourself a Clefable as well for Cynthia. It definitely helps.
Does it? Okay. Thank you. I'll remember that before I do it. The other thing, back kind of to into our retro corner, as we've been banging on and on about, not banging on and on about, but Lee's enjoyed customizing his old consoles. He did it with his Game Boy Advance and his SP and also his DS. And I say I'm going to do it. I will do it eventually, I promise. But I found some really, really cool designed SPs.
Wow.
On Reddit. So
Game Boy Advance.
Look at these bad boys. For... Ruby and Sapphire. That was the word I was looking for. So,
are these skins or are they actual?
No,
they're
cases. I mean, look at
wow.
these. They look gorgeous, bro.
That's super nice.
So nice. But yeah.
I love the Kyogre one.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
I want one of these. I want one. But
very,
I thought that
very
was,
nice.
I thought that was just nice. Like I say, you can do a lot of things. I do like the clear cases, but I think. You have to find the right decals and stuff that you want to go with them, because I think on their own sometimes the clear cases can just be it depends on the console, but they're not always the best looking. And then the other thing that I found was some guy, what the hell, why is it not gonna some guy got 16 cards in one pack in a
16
cards in one TCG pack, and these are his pulls.
What? No. That's got to be, that's not good. That's, that can't be right. That's got to be like, just fake.
I don't know.
16, and he got all of those.
Yeah.
That's mad.
I don't know.
Someone at the factory's like,
this guy's going to have a good day. I'm going to fix this up.
When I see a gold pack, this is a gold pack. Just scooping off the gold cards, ram them in. There you go. Wow.
Well, it was from a Family Dollar, so I don't know if that what that is, but he said it was a Rebel Clash pack, so.
What?
That's mad. Someone's here said they've had 15 cards in a pack before in Lost Origin.
Wow.
But it didn't give them anything special.
15. Jeez.
But I guess if the machine breaks, maybe if the machine jammed or something or malfunctions with, you know, maybe they've got a slot of super rare cards that they put into every, I don't know, 20 packs or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe it malfunctions and they just yeeted the extra cards in there.
Maybe, yeah.
But that is
wow.
I just thought it was crazy.
I'm looking forward to getting some cards, hopefully, when I'm over in Japan. You know, that's like the one thing, but I know that the issues that they're having over there at the minute.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to pick me up a booster box.
What of? Which one?
We'll see what we can get hold of, but I like Japanese booster boxes. They're very different to regular box booster boxes.
Oh yeah, I love opening Japanese
or English Western. They have their own. There's, you can get smaller ones like that. The special sets normally come in, and you can get larger ones. But the packs, you only get five in a pack. So they're very different. Obviously, the borders, we now have the sealed borders as well. But there's some very cool cards. The cards from the new 151 set, the Master Ball cards look so cool, man. The Master Ball Pikachu cards. Mwah. But if they have anything like that, 100% pick this one up. We can discuss that later on, but it'll be cool. I'm sure you'll find some cool stuff. I'm thinking about, you know, the skateboard. I kind of want the skateboard, the one they've done for this world, because I looked at them last year and I was like, they're expensive, but the one for this world looks so cool. And I'm like, oh, do I want to spend £200 on a skateboard that I'm just going to put on display? It's just like, I could use that to go to events. It's just like really hard to justify it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, they are nice though. I kind of regret not picking one up. But again, at the same time, I was like, it's a lot of money to like shell out. And I'd already spent a lot on the Pokemon Center of Worlds last year. So I was like, yeah. So maybe I don't know how easy it would be to get one back from Japan either. It would probably fit in the suitcase.
No, 100%. They're only about this wide. If you take you got to take a big suitcase with you.
Yeah, a biggie.
Worst case scenario, most Pokemon Centers do sell suitcases. So if you need to buy another one, just to fill with stuff,
fit my other suitcase in. Bigger suitcase, yeah.
Because I actually almost bought one because I had a Pikachu themed one when I was over there. And I was like, oh, should I buy it? Should I not buy it? But suitcase is one of those things that if you travel a lot, it makes sense. But I do travel, but I don't. To go on a big holiday where I need a large suitcase, that doesn't happen often. Maybe once a year, if that. So.
How big was the suitcase you took to Japan when you went?
It was large.
All those years ago.
It was a large suitcase. I don't know how to explain it. It was a chunky one, and then it had two zip-up compartments on either side, so both parts were zipped. It was very deep. It was probably about that wide. It was a large. I mean, obviously, the weight limit's normally only 23 kilos anyway, but you know, having the flexibility with a large suitcase is definitely better. It wasn't a small one, put it that way. I would deem it as a large suitcase that I took with me, so you'll be fine.
And I think to end on today, since I am going to Japan, it is my first time, and there might be listeners, viewers that are going out as well. As you are a established traveler of Japan from the past, what advice, what things would you say be aware of or make sure you have if you're going to Japan?
For me.
What am I going to need to make sure I have when I go out there? What am I going to make sure to do when I'm out there? You know.
Well, you've obviously got to hit Pokemon Center if you can. Hit the one in Yokohama.
Yes.
I know they're going to have one at the event anyway, but you've got to go to one just to experience what they're like. So if it's your first time, I would do that. If you can get to, I don't know if they have them in Yokohama, they have these secondhand stores called Mandaraka stores. I don't know if I've pronounced it, but they're like these secondhand stores were a bit like CX, but they sell everything. And they had, when I went again, I wish I knew more about Pokemon cards. They had binders upon binders upon binders of Pokemon, individual like Pokemon cards, and they were all pristine. That's where I got my first edition graded Chuckle card that got a 10 from there. Like, look, go into them stocks. They used to do Unlisted Leaf, and a lot of the other Pokemon channels kind of ruined it for a lot of people, but they used to do like these holo stacks that they would sell of like Japanese cards, like big chunks of holos, but they were so hard to find because once people found out about it, people would just go into them and basically raid them because they weren't super expensive as well. But off the podcast, I'll show you us what the stores are and we can work out whether there are some there, but I recommend that. And the only other thing I would say is cab drivers don't speak good English. I mean, obviously, being English, we're so ignorant and just expect everyone to speak English. And obviously, in a lot of Asian countries, it's a lot less spoken. And we found that the cab drivers, even showing them the names of places on Google Maps where we wanted to go, they still struggled. So just be wary of that if you're getting a cab on your own. But they were lovely people, obviously very polite and clean. Yeah, you're going to have a great time, but those are the only things that I would sort of mention.
Do they have Uber over there?
I don't remember using Uber at the time. We used local cabs. I don't think they... I don't know. I actually don't know. But I was with my granddad and he's a cabbie, so we obviously we went and got regular.
Saying that though, I use Uber in the UK and I get in sometimes, and like even though I order the Uber with my starting point to destination, the cab driver will still say, "Where you going, mate?" And I'm like, "Surely you got that when I put the request in and you accepted it, and it should be on your maps now," but it's not. So
yeah. Annoying. Anyway, hopefully next week we'll have a lot more to talk about. Obviously, it feels like we have actually had a lot of stuff to talk about this week as well. I don't think there's much else to say. Like I say, next week we'll call it on the Monday before you go. Hopefully, we will have had an announcement for presenters if it is coming. Maybe some more news, and then obviously next week's going to be really exciting as well because we'll have Worlds, and then the week after that we can talk about all the stuff that's been announced and what news we get. So
yeah.
Anything you want to say to sign off?
Nah, just thanks for tuning in, for listening, for all the support that you give the podcast.
Thank you so much.
I will be enjoying Japan. I will take as much footage, photographs and things to share on the podcast when I get back. And hopefully I've got some funny stories to share with you all.
We could do a Japan special episode.
Yeah, it'd be good. Cool. You know, I'm really looking forward to playing the grabby machines.
Oh,
you know,
I am
a fiend for the grabby machines.
They have literal arcades full of grabbers, mate. That is the cool thing. They do have some very cool arcades.
I'm going to go to town. I probably will. I am terrible for them, mate. If there's like, you know, the odd ones over in the UK here, I know I'm dragging this on, but they'll have like maybe Nintendo characters in. I'll be like, I'm staying here so I get one of those.
I need it.
I need it, yeah. But
in Japan they seem to make a lot more effort with some of the vending machines. So at least some of the stuff you'd be getting would be like specific to Japan, not like just like a cheap Mario plush that you could get online anywhere. So
yeah, I was speaking to Lou and she's the plushies that she's got, I think she got like a Dragonair and a Dratini last time I spoke to her, and she was like, they're like legit, like really good quality. She was like they're not like the cheap tat that you get in the UK. So I was like, well, that's cool. It's cool. At least the money that you pay for it's kind of worth it then.
Yeah. Wicked. So thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, obviously, Lee, for coming on the podcast as usual. It's
thank
been
you
fun.
As well, mate.
A lot to talk about. And then hopefully next week we'll be even more stuff to talk about. So goodbye for now, and we will see you next week. Au revoir.
Take care, friends.